Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. We're recording this on Sunday evening in between Croatia and Canada and Germany, Spain. But Kieran's a bit sleepy because, Kieran, you had a lovely day at the Dripping Pan yesterday, didn't you? And you got yourself all excited with chocolate and sugar, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I went to see Lewis play Pitney and Bowes. From sort of from Basildon way, and it was a cracking experience. So the Baroness came with me. She'd never been to a non-league match before, and she was very much taken with it. First of all, a cup of tea was only a pound, which was, you get ripped off at Premier League and EFL matches. And then we were invited in at half time to sort of meet a couple of people from the club, and they had wagon wheels. I was going, oh lordy, I've not had one of these since I was about 12. So the Baroness spoke to people, and I at wagon wheels during the half time break.
Was there an urchin selling programmes for 5p a pop?
In Lewis, Lewis is more hipster than Brighton is. So, no, sadly
were they,
not.
Were these ironic wagon wheels or actual old wagon wheels?
These are proper wagon wheels, although wow. a lot smaller. That's shrinkflation has really got to them, which was. Which was a tragedy, but proper non-league football, a goal direct from a corner, and a 21-man scrap in the penalty box when jostling for a corner was this is old school football. This is what we turn up for.
Yeah, how many cups of tea did the Baroness get through?
She got through two and a half.
Did she?
Yes. At that price.
You know what tea does. Tea goes right to her head, doesn't it?
So, Oh, yes.
It's questions day. We've got some really good questions, Kieran. The first one, I have to say, which comes from Lloyd Morgan, had me thinking for a good couple of hours, this question. I thought it was a really interesting one, and I'd be fascinated to hear what you say in reply. Lloyd Morgan says, as a Middlesbrough supporter of the last 27 years, I have seen teams in the North East slowly decline in size and stature compared to our southern-based counterparts. As the percentage of teams in the Premier League now shows a greater weighting towards southern clubs like Brentford, Fulham, Bournemouth, I should mention Brighton, Kieran, although he hasn't, obviously, as he's trying to get in my good books.
And Palace.
Oh, yeah, he hasn't mentioned Palace either. I'm not answering his question. That's it. more southern clubs rather than Middlesbrough and Sunderland. Why is this the case? Is it a simple case of money? And what can clubs who reside in the north who are less affluent do to counter this trend? It got me thinking, Kieran, about when we first started watching football. So Brian Moore, of blessed memory, on the big match, always said, because if we go from 1962, just to annoy Tottenham fans, between 1962 and 2022, it was 1971 until a London club won the league, Arsenal, and then it was another nearly two decades before it happened again. And Brian Moore always said that it's too difficult for a London club to win the league because there's too many London derbies when there are only three or four clubs. But, I mean, this is an interesting question because Newcastle are in the ascendancy in the North East now. It wasn't long ago since Middlesbrough were top dogs in the North East. And it's only really in the North West, in Liverpool and Everton. I mean, even in Manchester, City and United have had their turns out of the top league. So it's an interesting one. Is it just cyclical or is it money, Kieran?
I think it's linked to money, but it's also linked to The owners. So if we take a look at Newcastle, they're currently third in the Premier League on merit. Nobody can argue. They're playing some cracking football. But Mike Ashley's no longer there. So, the new owners have come in and they've spent £200 million. That's Finlay with his squeaky fox, if you can hear that in the background. And no wonder we don't get invited on to Celebrity Pointless.
It's his timing that does it.
So Mike Ashley was cautious with money. Then if we take a look at Sunderland, Sunderland are just coming out of the Charlie Methven and Stuart Donald era. And, the club was relegated from the Premier League. It did receive parachute payments. It does have a big fan base. Nobody can deny that. How those parachute payments were used has never quite been made clear. But they didn't necessarily go straight back into the playing budget. So Sunderland, I think, suffered due to owners. Newcastle had an owner whose focus was not on progressing things on the pitch. In the case of Middlesbrough, they've got Steve Gibson, who is a local lad. He's put over £200 million into the club. The trouble is in football is that it's a terrible thing to say. 200 million quid doesn't get you very far. If we go back to Derby and Mel Morris, for all of the brickbats that have been thrown at him, and I've lobbed the occasional one myself, he did put a lot of money into that club. He was well into nine figures himself. So it's spending it and spending it well. It's a terrible thing to say because this sounds like it's a regionalist comment. But if you're trying to attract players to come to your club, wages is one thing, location is another. Unless you're prepared to pay a premium wage, we can remember Ravanelli and Juninho and players like that going to play in Middlesbrough, but Middlesbrough were losing hand over fist during that period of time. Players like London. London's a sexy city. They can become invisible. They can go out and party. Whereas I think in the cities in the northeast, you're slightly more in focus as a footballer. So I think that there is the attraction of London. Manchester and Liverpool together now have a sort of a critical mass, which attracts players, as well as the wages. Manchester United, Manchester City, and Liverpool are the three of the four highest wage payers in the country. So that again attracts players elsewhere. So a function of money, yes. A function of if a player has got the choice between playing for Brentford or Fulham or Middlesbrough or Sunderland or Newcastle, and they're all offering the same wages, well, then other things come into the equation as well. Before Mike Ashley left, Newcastle, for a club that size, really didn't pay wages, which were which we'd call, say, in line with expectations. So that meant that they had to accept perhaps players who the fans perhaps wouldn't be over keen on, and ultimately that's impacted upon on pitch performance. And it's the same for Borough and Sunderland. That they have had Randy Lerner was at Villa, but in their previous owner at Sunderland, they had an owner that put money into the club, but it just wasn't enough to keep them in the Premier League.
Yeah, every time you say the words Randy Lerner, I panic ever so slightly, Kieran.
That's another podcast, isn't it?
Yeah. The London factor notwithstanding, I mean, we saw Wimbledon in the top division not that long ago. 10 years ago, if you'd said to a London football fan, Brentford and Fulham, with a capacity between them of about 35,000, a bit more than that, maybe, would both be in the Premier League, no one would have believed you. So is it simple as that? It's just location?
Well, no. I think, again, it does come back to the owners. In the case of Fulham, Shahid Khan has put thick end of £500 million into the club.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that helps. And in the case of Brentford, you've got another mathematical genius who uses data analytics to get Brentford into the Premier League and to get them, you know, in a decent position. As they've demonstrated both this season and last season. So I think if for some clubs getting there, it's because they are keener to embrace alternative ways of spotting talent. And I had a meeting early this week with some people who were sort of towards sort of the geeky end of things, and they were showing me which clubs use it and which clubs don't, and it was quite an eye opener.
I don't think it's down to Finlay's plaything that we're not on Celebrity Pointless, Kieran, considering that for years Alexander Armstrong was essentially Richard Osman's squeaky toy. I don't think that's what's keeping us off it. Our next question comes from Jordan King. And Jordan says, we know that the Champions League is the real money spinner of European football, but given Rangers got to the final of the Europa League and West Ham and Leicester got to the semi-finals of the league and conference respectively, how much would these clubs have earned from prize money, gate receipts and TV money?
Right. As far as UEFA is concerned, prize money and TV money are effectively the same thing, because they allocate according to how far you get into the competition. And as we know, UEFA also has a huge number of pots, including the 10-year coefficient, which we'll probably cover in more depth on Thursday because things are starting to kick off there. In the case of Rangers getting to the final of the Europa League, they made £17.3 million from their achievements last season. They would have got another £4 million had they won it, and then they would have got more money because they would have appeared in the Super Cup against Real Madrid, which I would imagine would have been for many Rangers fans, to see them in a final like that. So you'd imagine that would have been packed out. On top of that, I think they had 7 home games at Ibrox, probably bringing in the regional. It varies because in the group games you have to offer discounted or competitive prices for tickets. But they probably made in the region of 13, 14 million pounds. So you put those two together and you've got 30 million pounds of additional revenue being generated. But you then got, of course, players are on bonuses. That takes a slice. You've got the costs of hosting, the fees, and so on. But it's still a solid 30 million pounds. In the case of West Ham and Leicester, the Europa Conference, and this will sound terrible, it only generated around about £7 million in prize money and TV money. And I know that for some clubs, £7 million is 2 or 3 years' worth of their annual income in the lower leagues. But in the context of the Premier League, where both of those clubs are generating somewhere in the region of 150 to 200, it's not hugely significant. And again, once you've paid your additional costs, that they won't have made a huge sum of money. So the Europa Conference, it's for the glory, and when you get to those final stages, the money does start to rack up a bit more. I'm sure if either of our clubs got to the Europa Conference, we'd probably think it was one of the greatest seasons of our lives. Just to the thought of going to Albania on a Thursday night, I'd be there like a shot. But it's not particularly lucrative compared to the Champions League. The Champions League, I think it's for every £1 you get in the conference, £1 you get in the Europa League, you get around about 4.5 in the Champions League. And for every £1 that you get in the conference, you get around about 7 in the Champions League. So it is a significant difference.
Some fans dream of winning the Champions League, Kieran. Some fans dream of getting in the FA Cup third round draw. I dream of playing Vaduz away in the conference. Sort of an indication of where Palace are in the scheme of things. I've been to Liechtenstein. I would be the most excited. I just imagine 1,000 Palace fans crossing the border into Liechtenstein while the bemused bloke in the post office, which counts as the border building there, is wondering what's happening. name of the evening goes to Ray Challenger, which is that's up there with Max Power, as far as I'm concerned. That's a brilliant name. Imagine going into a pub. What's your name, mate? Ray Challenger. I'll get these drinks. I mean, even Uncle Terry would be impressed by meeting Ray Challenger. Ray's question is this. The Championship playoff final is often referred to as the most valuable game in the world, especially by Sky, 7 or 8 times per game per evening. And that got me wondering, and this is a great question, what do you think is the most valuable goal ever scored in financial terms?
The 11th of May, 2003.
Oh.
The final match of the Premier League season. And Chelsea are at home at Stamford Bridge to Liverpool. Yeah. They are equal on points. Chelsea have a superior goal difference. Sammy Hippier scores for Liverpool early on. Marcel Desailly equalises almost immediately. And then Jesper Gronchar scores the winner, which takes Chelsea into fourth position. And that means that they qualify for the knockout stages, the preliminary stages of the following year's Champions League. At that time, there was a Russian businessman thinking about buying in England, and he hadn't made his mind up. He had considered buying Manchester United, but he quite liked the idea of London. As you know, going back to our first question, many people from overseas, and I've lived in the city of Manchester, and I've worked in the city of Liverpool, and I've been to the northeast on many occasions. I love Manchester. I love, as my mum often refers to me, is I don't understand why you ever became a Manchurian, but this gave her the people in my mum lives in a little village in Mayo, and she told all of her friends that I'd married a local girl, and I had 2 Manchurian children. So that was really confused. So when they came across and they were 2 Manchester Scallies, my kids are going, they don't look as if they want some dim sum. But that's family nonsensicity. But had it not been for Jesper Gronchar scoring that goal, and had Liverpool won that match, then I think there's a very high chance that Roman Abramovich would not have bought Chelsea, and they would not have won the Champions League on 2 occasions, and they would not have won the Premier League. He put in, you know, £1.5 billion over the course of the next 19 years. So for me, that is the most valuable goal in the history of football. And I know Jesper Gronchar was one of those players who sort of blows hot and cold, but on that day he was worth his weight in plutonium, at least.
That's a great answer, Kieran. It's a really good answer. You actually took me there. If I was a Chelsea fan, God forbid, I think the hairs on the back of my neck would be rippling now. But I'm going to be interested to see on social media whether our listeners agree with you. In fact, I'm going to invite our listeners to disagree with you, to see what they think is the most valuable goal ever scored. It's a great question. Thank you, Ray. An equally good name, but in perhaps a more English way, if hobbits were English, is Dan Crook Sycamore. And Dan Crook Sycamore's question is, do you think flexi season tickets, which mix both physical and virtual tickets, will become more commonplace across the football pyramid?
Yeah, I was a little bit confused with this one from Dan, but I have looked up flexi season tickets, and I might have got the wrong end of the stick here. But for people not familiar, we've got clubs such as Carlisle, and what Carlisle say is if you pay a membership fee, we will guarantee you effectively 7 matches a season. And it only cost you £12 So you can buy tickets for up to seven matches a season for £12 each on top of a membership. So they call this a flexi season ticket because you are certain, and I think that's quite reflective of many people's lives in 2022, soon to be 2023. That as much as we want to go to every match, circumstances and life and externalities get in the way, as of course does the financial commitment. So I presume that's something in relation to Dan's suggestion. A lot would depend upon the club. I would imagine something like this would be really popular if, for example, Old Trafford was knocked down and replaced with a 90,000-seater stadium. Mm. Because for all of the criticism levelled at the Glazers, some of which is perfectly valid criticism, the one thing that they have done over the course of the last decade is to keep season ticket prices static, which is good. You know, if you're a hardcore Red, I think what they'd like to do is to sell more tickets to non-traditional season ticket holders. And Manchester United has a very international fan base. And if you said to a fan, we'll give you a season ticket, and you've got a five match season ticket, I think the club could make a lot more money out of it. Those fans that have to travel further, they would enjoy it as well. So I think flexibility and sort of alternative thinking in relation to season tickets will become more common as the game goes along. And apologies to Dan if I've completely misinterpreted where he said physical and virtual tickets. That did confuse me a bit.
Well, he may be talking about the idea, because there are some clubs where you can pay an extra £5-10 and your season ticket is actually tangible. You will get a ticket,
right. Yeah.
A card. I know you can do that at one or two Premier League. I know Palace, for example, are desperate to get everyone onto virtual tickets, whereas the fans are equally desperate to have a mix of both, at least for the next couple of years. So perhaps if Dan Crooks-Hickamore wants to indicate in an email, and that will jump the queue, whether or not that is the right question. That's a good explanation, Kieran. If you could now explain to me what the Bibbly Cheese semi-automatic VAR offside is, because Martin Keogh was trying to explain it the other day, going on about chips in the ball, and he confused himself and confused me in the process, I have to say. he lives in a state of semi-bemusement anyway, Martin Keogh, doesn't he? 2022, Martin. Stop saying handbags. Our next question comes from Clarissa Carpen. I watched the England game against the USA with Sam Allardyce the other night. Long story. Wow. I really had to keep checking my watch to see what World Cup I was looking at. I'm fairly certain it was 2022 when I entered the building, but never mind. Okay. Apparently no one could defend anymore. Just row Z. I don't think they call it that in Qatar, son. I don't think it's rosette in Qatar. Clarissa Carpen's question is this: what are the effects on club staff when a team is relegated? We've never really talked about this, Kieran, in detail. Clarissa says, I assume there's a mixture of staff cuts and brain drain. Are certain departments affected more than others? And are there pay cuts across the board? I work in marketing at a large law firm, and there's a stark divide between what the lawyers receive in terms of paid benefits resources versus non-attorney staff. I'm not surprised to hear that, Clarissa. It makes me wonder what happens to staff on football teams if players face wage cuts and or the possibility of being sold. And I think one thing we have discussed, Kieran, is that many people don't fully realise the effect that relegation has on the staff of the club. The players, to an extent, we know what's going on. But I'm a trustee of Palace for Life, the foundation at Palace. The thought of relegation is something we have to think about from the start of every season, because it will cost the club a fortune if Palace are relegated to the Jetty. Across the foundation, a fortune. We will lose a significant amount of money, and that's money that goes towards the community. So relegation is a real fear, and it really does affect the livelihoods of staff, Kieran, doesn't it?
It certainly does. If we take a, for example, Aston Villa were relegated from the Premier League at the end of the 2015-16 season. And they played the following season, a couple of seasons back in the Championship. Well, if you go into the small print of their accounts, which of course is something which I enjoy doing, the number of staff at Aston Villa, and this is sort of, this is the personal story of football. The number of staff decreased from 1,623 to 1,064, so 470 people. 570 people.
Wow.
Lost wow. their jobs on the back of that. And as you rightly said, in terms of the players, do players have relegation clauses in contracts? For the vast majority of clubs, that is the case. And I've always defended players' wages, as you know. But if a player goes from 45, 50 grand a week to 30 grand a week, they're still not going to be worrying about, can they go and put the bulbs? Can they go and switch a light bulb on? So I'm not saying that it has no impact upon them, but that they do have an element of protection. In respect of other staff, it's genuine fear. And certainly I've spoken to chief executives and financial officers at clubs, and that they say that's the thing which keeps them awake at night most of all, because it's the people who are Villa fans, who work in the club, who probably aren't getting market rates. And this is one thing that I get a lot of people emailing me, and I've Zoom conversations and contact me on Twitter and say, how do you get to work in the football industry? And I always give a degree of caution to this. I've got friends, I've got family that work in football, and they will say it's a job first and foremost. And if you're in marketing, if you're in transport, if you're a physiotherapist, that is your job. It just happens to be at a football club. And if you think that you'll be sitting at the canteen one day and Jurgen Klopp or Pep's walking past and you chip in with, have you ever thought about doing this for throw-ins? It ain't going to happen. It's not that relationship with players and management is professional or arm's length. So always bear this in mind. A good friend of mine, he was once offered a finance job at a very high profile football club, and after the interview he was offered the job and he turned them down simply because the terms and conditions weren't very good, and as he's said with me, the lack of controls at the club, the lack of proper financial common sense that was being applied to the club really shocked him, and he was even a supporter of the club. So there is a huge impact upon people, and that's going from the Premier League to the Championship, from the Championship to League One, where there's another big gap, and also going from League Two to National League. So there is a human cost. And I know people say, well, surely there's a yin and a yang in the sense that, the people that get promoted, they'll be employing more people. And yes, that is the case. But you're not working in the same city. And being made redundant, losing your job, is a very personal experience. And that's why there is more to football than meets the eye.
Well, that's a double whammy we talked about in, Derby, for example, was the last example. Before that, Wigan. I know a lot of people at Palace at all sorts of levels, and the players, of course, love the club and are committed to the club. The physios, the training staff, academy staff, they don't tend to be Palace fans. They're professionals who are doing their best for the club. But the ones that are getting laid off, the staff, the club shop people, the ticket people, they do tend to be Palace fans, because that's why they went for the job in the first place. So not only are they seeing their team relegated, they're being made redundant because of it. And it's heartbreaking. That's a hidden cost. If we talk about clubs going into administration, they're the people that really, really suffer.
I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
On a similar note, Travis Cottle. Now, I'm going to tell Travis off here because Travis prefaces his question by saying, my dumb American question is this. It's not a dumb question, Travis. As Kieran always says, the only silly question is one that's not asked. That's what he says on the pod. It's not what he actually says to me in private. But Travis Cottle says, my question is, what is the difference in costs to fans when a club is promoted or relegated? Presumably ticket prices will go up or down, but do other costs change, like concessions?
Hi, Travis. Normally there is an impact, especially when clubs are promoted. You might see your season ticket price frozen, and you might think, "Oh, I'm getting a good deal here." But remember, in the EFL Championship, you get 23 home games a season, whereas in the Premier League, you get 19. So there's sometimes a hidden price rise. What you will also tend to see is that if a club is promoted to the Premier League, and I appreciate this doesn't apply to all clubs. But it certainly does. Certainly does at mine. Is that the opponents effectively determine ticket prices? So we're playing our first match at home after the World Cup is at home to Arsenal, and Arsenal are a Grade A opponent. So I'm teaching quite a few students from Japan on the MBA course at Liverpool, and they're really keen to come and watch a match at the Amex because we've got Mitoma, who's a bit of a poster boy at their present. The ticket prices were right at the top end. Whereas, you know, no disrespect, but you know, if it is Bournemouth at home, if it is perhaps a side which doesn't have such a glamorous, then the prices tend to be lower, and that doesn't tend to be the case as much in the Championship and the lower leagues. So that applies for all match day tickets. It could be that when you're relegated, you know, I don't necessarily think your season ticket price will go down, but it will be difficult to justify it going up. And when clubs are a little bit forgetful that when you get promoted to the Premier League, you get four fewer matches a season, Their memory tends to come shooting back to them when they try to point out to you, well, you've got four extra matches this season if we get relegated. So don't expect a season ticket price cut.
You know what you should do, Kieran, with those Japanese students of yours, just to test their mettle and maybe give them an extra 10 points at the end of term, is to say, I'll get you tickets for the Brighton game, but you've got to sort your own train tickets from Liverpool to the South Coast. And if they manage that, then don't charge them for the Brighton ticket. The only trouble is we might end up with three or four, be like Challenge Annika. There'll be three or four confused Japanese kids wandering around Swindon railway station showing people photographs of you saying, do you know where I can find this man?
Yes, I'm travelling. So we're recording this on Sunday night. I'm travelling up to Liverpool on Monday morning. So I have to catch the 4:26 a.m. train. And it takes 45 minutes to get to the station, so it's an early start. And I've got 11 tickets for a day return from where I'm going to Liverpool. Such is the chaotic state of public transport in this country.
You made yourself sound like a tout. Then I've got 11 tickets. 11 tickets. Who wants a ticket? Who wants a ticket for 4:26? 4:20. It's not you. I feel sorry for getting that train. It's the poor sod who has to drive it. He's getting up now. Our next question, Kieran, comes from an anonymous listener, which makes me think it might be Swiss Ramble, who's stumped himself. He's come up with a difficult problem. He's thought, I know what I'll do. I'll ask Kieran. I'll put myself down on that 2-year waiting list and put myself down as anonymous. Anonymous listener says, and for the most part, we don't encourage questions for anonymous listeners, everybody. But it might be that he's got a name like Ray Challenger and doesn't want me going on about what a brilliant name it is. or his name could be Dick Sword Swallower, for all we know. Who knows? Anonymous listener says, both Real Madrid and Barcelona are spending a lot of money renovating their stadiums. However, the Bernabeu is only going to have an extra 800 seats, and Barcelona is spending more than £1 billion, adding only a few thousand extra seats to the Nou Camp. How do Real and Barca expect to make their money back on expensive stadium renovations with such small increases in stadium capacity? Are these good investments or vanity projects?
Real Madrid and Barcelona don't want legacy fans at their grounds, and they want to prepare the stadium for hospitality, for the corporate fan, for the fan who's prepared to pay premium prices in order to get a premium experience. And I'm not going to be overly critical about the cost of these tickets, because the same exists in other industries. The Baroness is a big fan of Take That. We have somewhat divergent musical tastes. So I've got her for Christmas. It's okay. She doesn't listen to the show. I've got her for Christmas, two tickets to go and see Take That at Hyde Park next year. And the prices, you can pay up to £300 or £400 for a ticket. And I'm going, yeah, what do you get from that? And you get a lanyard and you get free food and drink. I go, well, that must be a pretty impressive lanyard. And of course you get closer to the stage. And you know, if anybody has ever been to BST, it's a great festival day, provided the weather's good. So we are seeing that come into football as well. If you look at what happens at Bayern Munich, the Bayern say, we get more money from corporate customers than we do from the 55,000 regulars who turn up to watch the players. It is the Allianz Arena, isn't it? I think. That's what both Barcelona and Real Madrid want to do. It's not the actual number of bums on seat to bums, and that's how they see us. It's what can they do to attract the corporate euro for people who are prepared to pay premium prices for a variety of premium products. And we, you know, if you look at Manchester City, they've now got the Tunnel Club, haven't they? So you can now, if you've got certain seats, you can see the players warming up in the tunnel. Now, you know, if anybody's got a desire to see Jack Grealish picking his nose before a match, you know, somehow you get the opportunity to pay an awful lot of money for that particular privilege.
Yeah, I think I've probably told you in private my Take That stories, haven't I? Working with Take That.
Oh no,
on an ITV. Well, I'll tell the Baroness in private. All I will say is it's very, very difficult not to mention Robbie Williams when the last thing one of their people has said to you is, for the love of Christ, don't mention Robbie Williams. when you're ushered into Gary Barlow's lair, I presume the white cat must have jumped off his lap as I arrived in. Howard and Jason were chained up in the corner, nibbling on crusts of bread, learning the one dance they're allowed to do in the show. And it's like, don't, whatever you do, listen, mate, just don't mention Robbie Williams. It's like, don't tell me that, as I'm about to mention. It's like, all I can think of is Robbie Williams. No, lovely chaps, lovely chaps. I wouldn't invite any of them to a pub quiz, but lovely chaps. Gary's a great musician, Gary. Great.
He is.
The others are there dancing. They should just be given a pair of maracas each, essentially, but yeah. I understand why women like them. No, I don't say why. I understand why people like them, though. They're great entertainers, especially when Robbie Williams was in it.
One of the first dates I ever had with the Baroness was I took her to see the Take That musical in London's swanky West End, and As every time I'm in the Bad Books, she says, "You don't love me." I said, "Yes, I do love you. I took you to see the Take That musical," and I think it's fair to say
as a straight male, I was in a very significant minority, and I got told off by the woman sitting the other side of me for not getting up and dancing and singing along to some of the songs.
Well, I mean, I have to say, Rule the World or whatever that song, and that's a great song, but having to sit through 2 hours to take that song sung by somebody other than Take That, I can't imagine anything worse. Let's see how many followers we lose off the back of that conversation. Our penultimate question comes from Lawrence. And Lawrence says, you've mentioned in the past that Burnley used to be the best run Premier League club financially. Who would you say is the best run club now? And where would my team Aston Villa sit? We are racking up losses and reliant on owners, but at least we are debt free.
Lawrence, the champions of the price of football, best run Premier League club are without doubt Tottenham Hotspur. They really do wash their face. They've made more profits than any other club. They made four times the profits of Liverpool and five times the profits of Manchester United over the course of their Premier League tenure. They've had wages as low as 39% of revenue, and also in respect of the new stadium, I think they are the club that have really sat down and thought about things about, yeah, how do we make a 25-day-a-year business into something which is far more flexible and far more successful at generating income. Yeah, and every single thing has been thought of that club. Yeah, we know that they've got the roll-in, roll-out pitch. We know it's hosting non-football things. Yeah, everybody's heard about the catering and the, you know, you say, oh, your pint of beer gets the beer pumped in from the bottom. And then you've got the magnet, which prevents it from leaking out. Isn't that really a wacky thing? What people don't realise is that it reduces the amount of time it takes to pull a pint by 10 seconds. You multiply 10 seconds by 50,000 people, you know, you end up selling more catering. They make around about £800,000 a match from catering, and even more than that when it's NFL because they put the prices up. Spurs are by far the most efficient, followed by Arsenal. But Arsenal have struggled in recent years due to not qualifying for the Champions League. As far as his club, Villa, are concerned, Villa are right at the opposite end of the spectrum. Villa have lost £472 million in the Premier League. So that's the third highest after Chelsea and Manchester City. This isn't having a dig at Villa. Chelsea and Manchester City can say, well, yes, we've lost a fortune, but look at our trophy cabinet. I think Villa have sort of got the worst, you know, the opposite of the sweet spot, in the sense that that they've racked up huge losses and they've not managed to convert that into trophies in recent years. They have got very good owners. Their owners regularly put money into the club, not in the form of loans, but in the form of shares, which does give the club additional security. But it's been a very expensive experience for Wes Edens and Naz Sawari.
That 39% wages to revenue figure at Spurs, Kieran, is incredible considering some of the numbers you've been telling us about from the Championship, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, I think they've, you know, it's gone up in the last couple of years because if you've got Mourinho and Conte at the club, they want you to spend money. But they have done extremely well, Spurs, and they set themselves targets and budgets and they stick to them. I think they've had the, wouldn't say the fortune, but you know, when they recruited the likes of Harry Kane via the academy, one thing you tend to notice with academy players is that for a few years at least, that they are relatively underpaid. Until Harry Kane renegotiated his contract, they were getting him in terms of his ability for a relative pittance compared to other elite strikers.
Our final question, Kieran, comes from Alan Hemphill, And Alan says, how common are transfer release clauses in player contracts? And will they be more common in future if players see the potential for higher wages if they are cheaper to purchase?
They are becoming increasingly common because since the arrival of the Bosman ruling, and for people that may not be familiar with it, it's if you have a four-year contract and you get to the end of your final year, you are then allowed to leave the club for nothing. And what players and agents realised was that if you could leave for nothing, it meant that your previous club didn't get a transfer fee, and therefore you could get effectively the equivalent of a transfer fee for signing on for a new club. So this was beneficial for players at the elite level in particular. And we've seen with Manchester City signing Haaland, they did that for, I think it was a €60 million release clause, £51 million pounds, and arguably a bargain, you know, considering what the going rate you would expect to be for a player of that nature. So therefore, players' representatives will put in these release clauses, and if you are following the popular press, there is actually a big debate taking place at present as to just what is Haaland's release clause at Manchester City, and does that taper down as we get closer and closer to the end of his contract. So I would certainly, if I was a representative, I would try to ensure that that's put into the contract, because it's in the best interests of the player. It stops clubs putting out ludicrous fees or fees which are going to put off other clubs. And again, we look at the Manchester City situation. I think it's fairly well known that they were keen to sign Harry Kane about 18 months ago, and that didn't materialise because he didn't have a release clause in his contract, and Spurs were quoting, I think, £150 million for him to move on, and City weren't prepared to pay that much.
Yeah. Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution as well, then that would be very kind of you. Then go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. And if you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. We'll be back on Thursday with our usual news pod. In the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, as always, folks, thank you very much for the support for the show. Thanks for keeping in touch through a variety of means. It does keep us on our toes. And just a quick shout out to the turnstile operator at Lewis, who contacted me overnight to say, I thought it was you. I thought I recognised that voice as you went through, but I wasn't certain. And thank you to Lewis FC for the wagon wheel as well. So if you want to support the club, Patreon is one method, and we really appreciate everything that you do for us with that particular means. Another way of doing so is going on to your app and putting a review. And if you can give us 5 stars, it helps us in the charts. And it doesn't matter what you put. You could even put, you'd rather have the show presented by Carlton Palmer and Jeffrey Dahmer. And it would make a blind bit of difference to us.
It would make, obviously, Jeffrey Dahmer's a horrible man, but I wouldn't wish him Carlton Palmer on him at all. Have you reached the point, Kieran, where you are raising your voice every time you see somebody in the hope that they might recognise it?
No, I hate things like that. I get very confused.
Yeah, Well, it's another Sam Allardyce. During the ad break for the England game the other night, my son, who is the face of the ITVX advert, was on. And I went, oh, Sam, there's my son. And he said, which one is that? He said, it's only him and a woman. That's another reason why I'm slightly confused by life. But thank you for listening, everybody. If you recognise Kieran's voice when you're out and about, please let us know and enjoy these.
Or if you're on the 426 from Haywards Heath tomorrow morning, come and say hello.
Oh, it's going to turn into one of those. I was reading a brilliant book recently about, I can't remember the name of the train now, but it's a train, like a showbiz special that used to go from Brighton in the morning and in the evenings, and in the evenings on the way back, it was full of people like Laurence Olivier and famous actors. And it turned into a Persona 426 from Haywards Heath tomorrow is now going to turn into a football finance podcast party. It's the party train. Like Jimmy Hill used to have the Coventry. And that's a way of ending the pod I didn't think would happen. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The price of football. Price of football.